Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Hikamo podcast hosted by myself, William, and my co-host, Hannah. The aim of the show is to help you discover career options by sharing career insights and advice from people working across a range of industries. Today's guest is training to become a commercial pilot and has graduated from Buckinghamshire New University with a first-class honours in air transport and commercial pilot training. She is currently studying a master's in international aviation regulation and law, whilst undertaking a full-time role working as a project officer on the COVID team at Buckinghamshire New University. On top of all of this, she is training towards a commercial pilot's license and has recently launched an online business designing hand-painted personalized notebooks. Please join us in welcoming Faraya Ahmed.
Hi guys, really happy to be here today. I'm really looking forward to talking about my experience and yeah, just sharing what it's like.
Great, thanks. It's great to have you on the show. I know Hannah's really excited. Aviation is definitely an area that she's really keen to learn more about, and I know a lot of our audience will be also. So what I'm going to do now is hand over to Hannah to ask a few questions. Over to you, Hannah.
Hello everyone. So I just wanted to start off by asking, when and how did you first decide that you wanted to become a commercial pilot?
So for me, I suppose it goes along with every child's dream of aviation and just having a passion for things in the sky. I remember going on holiday quite a lot as a child, and I just remember being at the airport. And for me, the airport was like the most exciting part of the holiday because of all the aircraft, all the planes. And I remember when the Emirates A380 first came into service, and I was like, this plane is going to take off with like 500 people. It's like 100 times the size of me. And I just remember being so fascinated about it. And then since then, I just sort of developed that passion. So my head was always in the sky. I remember in sixth form, it got to the point where two of my best friends, they actually also was able to plane spot with me. They also knew some of the aircraft because of how much I talked about it and stuff. And whenever I'd be like, what's that plane? They'd actually say the correct number, like they'd say A380 or 747 or something like that. And then it got to a point where I was in sixth form and I was deciding what I really, really wanted to do. And that's when I decided I actually want to pursue this dream of mine and actually become a commercial pilot.
It's amazing, because it's true, it's something that we all think about when we're younger. Yeah, I want to be a pilot, but people just never pursue it. But it's amazing that you're actually pursuing your dream. And would you say, like, the application process, what was that like for you to become a pilot, basically, for the training and whatnot? And is it quite intense?
So the way I did my training is actually I went through a university route. So my course was commercial pilot training combined with a bachelor's degree. So I had to apply to the university via the normal UCAS sort of way. So it was do your A-levels or do equivalent and then apply to UCAS when I was in year 12, year 13. And then from then it was, once I got my conditional offer, they actually changed it to unconditional a couple of days before results day. It was actually the morning of results day. I remember this. It was 6 o'clock on the morning of results day. So I was awake, already nervous about my results. And I remember receiving an unconditional offer. So I was like, wow, this is set. So from then it was joining university, and within the university course, because you're doing the flight training, you don't actually do it at the university, you do it at another flight school. So you have to do separate application processes for that. And because of the way I'm doing modular training, which means I can go to multiple schools to do different things, all the different schools had their different requirements for joining. But overall, it wasn't too tough. It was just you needed to show that you had the passion, you had the dedication, and you were really interested in having it. So especially for the university, when I was doing the personal statement, they really wanted to see that I had that passion for aviation and that I was willing to spend the next 3 years of my life dedicated to working really hard towards getting a bachelor's and doing the training.
Absolutely. So what subjects did you do at A-level? Do you remember that far A-level. Back? As well,
yeah, that was like 5 years ago, I think now. A-level, wow. I did maths, biology and psychology. I did do chemistry at the beginning, but I did drop it towards because it was a bit too much, especially doing maths and biology. I felt like chemistry, another STEM subject on top of that, was just a lot on my plate. And with the university that I was applying to, they only asked for 3 A-levels. So I thought I'd rather get really, really good grades in 3 than get mediocre in 4. So yeah.
Definitely. And what kind of grades did you need to get into the university that you wanted to go to?
The university I wanted to go to, they were asking for, I think it was around 96 to 112 UCAS points, depending on your application. And with this university, the course is very varied. So we have a lot of people who are mature students. We have a lot of people who go through really, really different routes before doing the degree. So each application on my course, they were assessed on an individual basis. So a lot of us got very different sort of entry requirements just based on what we were doing at the time, what we were studying and what we wanted to do.
So it is quite flexible, you would say, to basically.
It was very flexible, yeah. So we had a lot of people, even if they didn't meet the entry requirements, they were sort of coached and told to go on this access course or do this and this and this. And by the time it was time for September, they had already got the qualifications they needed. So it was really, really good, yeah.
Amazing. Really, yep. So how long does pilot training take in total? And basically, because it's such a niche, what are your job options after that?
So it depends if you're going straight to flight school, if you're doing something like I did. So if you go straight to flight school, they normally say it takes about 18 months up to 2 years. But the way I did it, because I was combining my bachelor's degree, which is a normal 3-year degree, with the commercial pilot training, in normal circumstances pre-COVID, it would have probably taken about 3.5 years, because you have the 3 years for the bachelor's and then you have that little half at the end of your third year where you finish that last bit of training. So it really depends on your personal circumstances and also what school you go to. Some schools go through a lot quicker than other schools do. With the university as well, you have to think about all the academic modules you'll be doing, the dissertation and all that stuff, all adds into how quickly you want to progress. But even with the university one, there is a lot of flexibility of how quickly you can progress. So for me, I actually delayed the last bit of my training. So I graduated in June and I was meant to finish my last bit of training within those summer months. But because of all the COVID stuff that happened, I decided to push it back a bit. And that allowed me to do a master's and also work at the university as well.
Awesome. Is essential for you to go to university to become a pilot, or are there other routes like an apprenticeship or some other, like just going to flight school? Or is that connected to the university regardless?
So to be a pilot, you don't actually have to go to university. You don't actually have to hold a degree. But especially nowadays in such a competitive market, when they're, especially like with COVID and stuff, to stand out more, we really, really recommend that students do something else in the meantime as well, like doing a bachelor's degree or doing some sort of education program. Because at the end of the day, every pilot is going to have a pilot's license. To make you stand out, we want to really encourage people to try and do other routes. And especially like going to university, you get that whole university experience of building your confidence, learning academic skills, like stuff like referencing and writing essays and stuff. You build all of those skills. And especially if you're doing a degree in aviation like I did, you build such a big, strong background knowledge in aviation. So for me, I was learning about stuff like the global context of aviation, airline finance economics, and all that stuff that I never learned during flight school, but I learned when I was doing the degree. It just helped me gain a stronger understanding of the industry, and I feel like when I go to interviews and stuff, I'll have a lot more to say and I'll have a bigger understanding of what the aviation industry is as a whole, because we look at specific companies, we look at how they can be better, the management side to it. So it's sort of like doing a business degree sort of slash management degree, but all to do with aviation. So you develop a lot more skills. You can go to flight school just like that and just go to flight school and get your license, but then there's also a thing of every pilot has to have a class one medical. So this gets checked every year. And if you, for some reason, don't meet all the requirements, you can lose your medical, especially towards the end when you're a bit older. Some people tend to develop a lot poorer eyesight or some sort of health problems. And once that medical goes, it's just, you can't fly. So you're kind of left with, what do I do now? Do I have to go back to training? Do I have to go back into education? But doing this bachelor's, it already means that you already hold a bachelor's degree, and two, it's in aviation management. So it's sort of, you're already up there without having to do any more training, and it gives you some sort of safety net as well. So it gives you a lot of experience, a lot of education, and it just makes the whole experience so much nicer from what I've experienced myself.
In terms of the medical that you said that you have to pass each year, what other criteria fit under that?
So it's mainly, well, it depends on the state that you're doing it in. So the UK has a different one compared to European countries, but it was all basically testing your general fitness. And because pilots have to sit in the cockpit for like 8 hours on end, and they have to be medically fit enough to be able to handle any reactions or anything within those 8 hours. So it's like also your eyesight, your general fitness, your cardiovascular health, all those sorts of things. We just need to make sure that you're keeping fit and you're keeping on top of things, because at the end of the day, you're in control of such a big aircraft, and you need to be, you're responsible for all your passengers at the back. So you need to be on the top of your form.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. So what universities did you apply to, if you can remember? Because, you know, it's quite a while back as well. And what made you choose specifically Buckinghamshire New University?
So when I was applying for universities, there were very few that offered aviation and pilot training. There were quite a few that offered aerospace engineering with pilot training. But for me, engineering was just well out of my game. I wasn't interested in it, and I just felt like it would be a lot for me, especially if I was doing pilot training with it. I remember applying for Kingston and Middlesex. They both offered commercial pilot training with aviation. I know UWL has now started to offer, but when I was applying, they didn't have that course. But with Bucks, the more I read up about it and the more I read up about the degree itself, so on the website, you can actually see what modules you're doing. And I had a look at the modules, and they were just so interesting, and they were so different. Like, you learned so much more about the aviation. It was like doing flight training, but an additional course. Like, you learn so much more about the industry, and you learn all of these things to do with business and management. And I thought that's just perfect for me, because for me, I really liked learning about management stuff and doing a degree, but related to aviation, it was just perfect. And then when I visited Bucks for it was an open applicant day, and they were talking about all the experience they've had. So they've been running now for 21 years with this course. So we're like the oldest university with this course going on. And they have like 5 different aviation courses at bachelor's, and even more now at master's. So I thought, okay, they have the experience, they have the industry knowledge. And then when I went there, I saw that a lot of the lecturers themselves were either pilots, like part-time pilots or ex-pilots, or they worked in the industry somewhere else. And then I felt like they knew what they were doing. They had all that experience, and especially with the guest lecturers, like, they had really strong connections with external companies. So when I was in my third year, we actually had British Airways come in and talk about their graduate programs. And they sort of said, at the end of the course, here are a few graduate programs. If your graduates are interested, we would like to put you guys forward for the process. So I thought, all the experience, all the knowledge, the modules were amazing for me. It just fit perfectly. And the way they integrated the flight training, so it wasn't just do your university and do your flight training. It was once a week you actually fly, twice, 3 times a week you're in university, and that's in your first year. So from my first week of university, I was actually flying. And then, and then within my first year, I actually completed my private pilot's license. So I think it was like within 8 months, I was ready to fly an aircraft by myself, take whoever I want up by myself within year one. And then by the end of year three, you've got your full license. So I thought, this just makes so much sense for me.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Because definitely as well, like, looking at the different modules that each university offers, I think that's a really good like criteria to basically use when you're picking the university.
Exactly.
And as well, when you mentioned ex-pilots and whatnot that taught at your university as well, that's a good sort of backup career option. If, let's say, you fail in medical, that is a really good year.
Exactly. Because you already have that bachelor's degree. You could potentially work in a university setting just like people have done. Or even if you don't need your medical, but you want to spend less time flying and do something more academic, you've got that door open for you now, because you've done a bachelor's, you know how university works, you can do additional courses, and then you're set. So yeah, it's really, really good.
Awesome. So there is sort of a lot of options with that degree kind of thing. You don't just have to go into literally flying a plane.
Oh, yeah, 100%. That's probably one of the biggest reasons I did the degree, because it opens so many other options. So you can go into the industry, within working with airlines, you can work with other companies. You have that business management sort of knowledge as well. So you can take those skills you've learned and place it into another company. Again, you could do aviation lecturing, all these different things, but it just builds your knowledge. It gives you a whole well-rounded experience rather than just flight training, learning how to fly a plane and all the bits that go with that.
Awesome. So when you was coming up to the end of sort of your graduate degree and that whole experience, what made you decide that you wanted to go into a master's?
So for me, I graduated when COVID hit. And so I was actually in my second semester when all of the COVID stuff happened and we went into first lockdown. So I spent the last few months of my university course doing it at home, online, etc., and having to adapt. And then I thought to myself, the flight training that I wanted to do, I thought maybe it's best if I put it on hold just for the moment, because the aviation industry was going rapidly, really, really going down. And I thought, me as a cadet pilot, I'm going to have little to zero experience than someone who's got 1,000 hours. So I thought, what can I do in the meantime? And use my time wisely, but also wait for the aviation industry to recover a little bit. So I thought, I was looking around and I thought, okay, I applied to so many jobs over the summer, and it was just because I think every single graduate, every single young person was applying for the same jobs. It was just non-existent. And I thought, okay, a job might not be likely at the moment, especially with the current climate where not many people are hiring. Then I thought, could I do an extra course? What type of courses were out there? But then I thought, doing a master's, especially the one at Bucks, it was only 1 year. So it's actually a full-time master's course, but only over 1 year. So it was pretty intense, but it meant that those academics, so that one academic year, I can be spending getting a whole nother qualification, but then also increasing my prospects of getting a different job or a better job because I have an additional qualification. I have something to show that, I've got the knowledge in different in different parts of the industry, and it was just, it just fit everything well so together that I thought, this is what I'm going to do for the next year.
Awesome. It's good that you could kind of foresee that the job market was kind of looking a bit unstable. Yeah. So then you can directly think, yep, let me go into a master's and sort of add to my education.
Yeah.
And what made you in fact stay at Bucks for your master's, and how does a master's compare to the graduate degree?
So doing so staying at Bucks was, to be honest, the experience I had at Bucks first of all was really, like, was amazing. I had the best 3 years of my life so far. Everyone, all the lecturers, because Bucks is not your standard massive university, so it's quite smaller compared to the other universities. Class sizes were a bit smaller, and tutors were, we got to know each other on a personal level. So it wasn't like you saw your tutor once in a blue moon and then that was it. Most, like, within a couple of weeks, everyone knew each other's names, everyone knew, like, your work ethic, then your ability, and all the lecturers, they had their doors open all the time. So I thought, okay, I've already established such a good relationship with everyone here, and especially at Bucks, because the master's was only 1 year compared to other universities where it was slightly longer, I thought I would rather stay on and have that flexibility, have that confidence in going somewhere where I know everyone knows what they're doing, everyone knows who everyone is, and it was just, it fits so well with the way the world was working at the moment. I thought, even if I had to go online for my master's, I would still have that confidence and know that the lecturers were still going to be able to support us, because I had that online teaching when I was in my second semester, so I knew how it kind of worked. And honestly, throughout the second semester of my third year, we were supported all the way through, so we had regular contact time. Even when I'm doing my dissertation, I met with my supervisor at least once a week, online. Even though it was online, it still felt like, I still had that contact time, I still had that support. So I thought, with the way the world's going right now, I have that confidence that I know that Bucks will support me wherever I am, whether I'm at university or whether I'm at home doing it. And it has worked out really, really well. So especially like this year when I did the master's, the first three modules were actually on campus, but the last two have been online because we moved back to online learning. And the experience I've had has still been up to the highest standard, because the lecturers have really been working to the max to get the same experience we could get but being at home. Cool. So it has been really, really good. It's amazing. Been a good choice.
definitely. And in terms of applying for a master's, I know for sixth form students this is quite a while away, but I know that the fees different, and do you still apply through student finance? Can they fund it, or is there external funding that you can get to do a master's?
So with a master's, it does work slightly differently to a bachelor's, so you do get student finance as well. The price of the master's actually depends on the course you do, so some courses are different, it's not a set price. But in terms of the student loan, you with the government, it's not dependent on how much you earn or how much your family owns. It's, you can apply for the maximum loan, and then the money comes to you, and then you pay the university how much the course is. And with the extra money, you can use for like your extra maintenance if you want to. But again, if you didn't want to take out a loan, you can self-fund it yourself, you can pay for it yourself, which I know some people have done, because it's considerably less than a bachelor's because of the time length. So for me, it was only 1 year compared to the bachelor's, which was 3 years.
Yep.
Yeah.
Cool. For yours specifically, if you don't mind me asking, how much is it?
For mine, so my course, because I'm a Bucks alumni, Bucks actually do a discount for all alumni. So if any graduate who's done a bachelor's degree at Bucks wants to do a postgrad, they actually automatically get 20% off their postgrad course. Yeah. So I paid just under £8,000 for my total course, which worked out a little bit cheaper, and I was able to take out the full student finance loan. So it was covered. It was a really, really simple process. Like, I didn't have to go through all the details you go through for bachelor's. It was just apply what course you're doing, and then within a couple of weeks, it was all sorted.
That's amazing. That was another incentive for you to stay at Bucks.
It really was. That was another big incentive for me, actually, because I thought, do I really want to be going, taking out more money and, you know, all that extra debt? But because of that 20% off, I just thought, you know what, it's worth it.
Amazing. So in terms of your career specifically and on your course, like, what type of proportion of women to men were there? So how many women were there even on your course? Because I know that piloting in general is quite dominated by men.
Yeah. I remember when I first started it, this was like 4 years ago now, with my course, I think there was about four other girls, and I think in the whole class there must have been about 80, 90 guys. So immediately when I walked in, I was like, whoa. Like, I knew that I was expecting it to be male dominated, but I think I didn't know what to expect until I actually walked in, because when I was in primary, secondary, sixth form, it was all mixed and it was all like a balance between the two. But when I went to university, I knew I had to prepare myself that it's going to be quite male dominated with the way the industry is. But when I first started, I know I was very nervous. I was very apprehensive. I was like, do I really want to be doing this? Because I'm going to be different to everyone else. But honestly, when I went in for my first day, I sat down and immediately I was with like three other guys. They started talking and it was just like everyone was so eager to get to know each other. Everyone was so friendly. It just made me feel a bit more calmer. And then when I went into my second year, I was actually at flight school, and it was actually one of the biggest flight schools out there at the moment. And I remember being one girl in, I think it was like five or six of us girls out of maybe 300 guys. So out of then, I felt like even more, I was like even more self-conscious, because I knew obviously I stood out and I knew I looked different. And obviously people learnt my name quicker because I was one of the only few girls. Mm-hmm. And I knew that like when I went into the cafe, I was probably one of the only girls there. But again, everyone was so, so friendly. Everyone was so like, it's almost as if they didn't see it. Like, I know I saw it because it was in me, but I felt like the other guys didn't. To be honest, the guys were actually nicer to me than they were to each other, because I don't think they were, they knew that, you know, it's quite different and it might be quite daunting, but everyone was super, super lovely. And throughout the last 4 years that I've been doing aviation or been in the industry, I've seen more and more girls join the course, especially at Bucks. So I think I started with four girls in my class, but then I think now the last year they've got like at least 10 or 12, which is a massive step up from when I first started. So I can genuinely see a massive increase in a lot more girls applying, a lot more girls being more confident in it. And it's just been really, really good.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
What would you say could incentivize more women and more girls that may be apprehensive to go into piloting? And what would you tell them to basically go for it, kind of thing?
I would say don't let your fears hold you back, because once you go through it, you'll sort of look back and be like, was that all I was scared about? Because I remember when I started, I was so nervous and I was constantly doubting myself, and I was the least confident person there. But looking back, I was like, there was genuinely nothing to be afraid of. Even like all the instructors I've had, they've absolutely been so amazing, so kind. And it's like, they're not like, you know, strict and harsh and, you know, you have to prove yourself because you're a girl and you don't belong in aviation. It was none of that. It was just more, they were very encouraging. And I feel like the more you get into the industry, the more you actually find people that everyone's really, really lovely. It's such a small world, and they're like, there are people that I know of who are friends of this person and friends of this person, and everyone is just so, so lovely that it shouldn't let you hold you back. Whether you're doing pilot training or a STEM subject or something like that, there is that element of you might have to, you know, be more confident and stuff. But other than that, it's just, you're going to pursue your dream, so why not?
I suppose I have to commend you, sort of thing, because you put yourself out there and whatnot, and you're pursuing your dream, and you're on LinkedIn, and I know that people reach, like a lot of girls reach out to you and say they want advice from you and whatnot. So it just takes one person like yourself,
exactly,
just really showing your passion for piloting. What would you say are the key skills required to become a pilot, aside from the health sort of, you know, your eyesight and cardiovascular training and whatnot?
The key ones, I would definitely say you need to have that passion and determination, because pilot training isn't easy. Like, I know people say you get in a plane, you press a button, autopilot does everything. It's honestly not that, especially during training. It's very intense. And because it's in such a short time, you have to learn a lot of things very, very quickly. And I feel like those people who I've been through with the journey, those people who didn't have that immense dedication or, you know, that hard work that, okay, I'm here now, this is what I need to do, I need to put my head down, they sort of dropped off. But those people who really had that, yes, this is what I want to do, this is what I'm going to do, this is how I'm going to achieve it, they really, really soared and they excelled so much. So I feel like if you have that passion, everything else comes with it. All that hard work, even with the university stuff, those people who are half-hearted about it got, you know, okay grades, but those people who genuinely really wanted it and really worked hard for it, they got amazing grades, they graduated really, really well, and they passed their pilot training, all those exams within, like, with flying colors. So I feel like your attitude towards it just makes the biggest difference. No matter, you could be the smartest person in the room, but if you don't have that dedication, or if you don't have that, you know, I want to be doing this, this is what I'm here for type of thing, then I feel like it's not going to work out as well as you want it to.
Definitely. If, let's say, this COVID situation, obviously it has been quite, you know, daunting for people that want to go into the piloting industry. Yeah. What would you say for you specifically, what would be your backup option, like worst case scenario?
So for me, because I've done the bachelor's in aviation management and I'm now doing master's in international aviation regulation and law, I've got sort of that knowledge and that experience where I can sort of apply for industry programs, industry jobs, or anything within the industry. So I've already got that foot in without having to do those extra qualifications and extra training, which is where, again, doing something university wise as well as doing a flight training helps so much, because you have one, you have those connections, you have that network that you start to build as you, you know, go through the course, and you also have, you're more open to these opportunities. Because I remember when I started the course, I had no idea what all of these letters and these acronyms meant. I had no idea, like, how the aviation industry worked. I didn't even know how the training was going to go. But because I built that, all that knowledge from the course, I now know that if I don't get to do pilot training at the moment, there are other things, other options I can explore, such as going in the industry or working through an airline, or, you know, all the graduate jobs as well. Because you do need to have some sort of degree to get a graduate job. And like the one I have now at the university, even though it's not aviation related, it's still a graduate job, it's still in higher education. So I was able to use the skills I got from doing a degree into another job. But even though it wasn't aviation, it's still something that I'm learning a lot about, and I'm learning even more skills again that I never would have if I didn't do a degree or anything like that.
It's amazing. Thank you very much. That was so informative. Very informative. It's even made me question now if I want to do some flight training myself.
Yeah, why not? One thing I would recommend, if anyone who's actually really looking forward to doing pilot training or anything like that, I would really, really recommend taking a trial flight. I know there are like hundreds of airfields across the country who offer trial flights where you can go up like half an hour with an instructor, and they'll take you up, they'll show you what it's like to be in a plane, they'll show you how to fly.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's a lot of stuff like that. So I remember when I did it, when I was in sixth form, I asked my mum, I was like, mum, can I go on a trial flight? And we booked one, and I'll still never forget it. That was like 5 years ago now, but I'll still never forget it. The first time I went up in a plane by my, like, with an instructor, a small light aircraft, and that's sort of when I caught the aviation bug strongly, because I knew, once I've done this, I can't go back now. I really, really want to do this. So yeah, there are so many different places you can, like even work experience or just, you know, all those sorts of stuff to get you interested in this, in the place, or even talking to someone again, like me, who can give you more information and tell you where, point you in the right direction of what you want to do.
That's really insightful. Very honest of you. Really appreciate you sharing that with us.
You're
and
welcome.
The audience. One question that I have is, I know there's a lot of people that they're really interested in flying, but they're also scared of heights. Is
that's
there
me.
Anyone on your course that's, oh, okay, there you go then.
Yeah, that's me. So funnily enough, I'm actually really scared of heights. Like, I don't like roller coasters, and I don't like, You know those buildings where they have open roofs and you can walk out and then you can see like the glass. I hate that. Like it just makes me sweat and I hate it so much. But I feel like flying is completely different. I don't know why, but it like no one understands it until they actually go up. But flying is very, very different. Like because you're in control of the aircraft or you're sort of sitting at the front, you know what's going to happen. Whereas in a roller coaster, it's just, you know, the roller coaster goes at whatever speed it goes at and you're twisting and turning. But when you're flying, because you're in control, because you know what you're doing, especially with all the knowledge and training you get, you know exactly what happens, why this happens, or why, for example, the turbulence happens. So you know exactly why the bumps are coming or what happened. I just don't feel that scaredness of heights. Like even when I'm looking down at the aircraft, I don't feel scared. But when I'm going on a roller coaster or some high building, I hate it. So I wouldn't say a fear of heights should put you off pilot training, because I know actually a lot of my friends are still... they're flying 737s. They're still scared of heights. But it's just something about being in an aircraft. It's just different. I don't know how to explain it until you get in an aircraft. But no, I wouldn't let it put you off.
Yeah, I think that really makes sense, though, the fact that you're in control.
So, thanks.
It's good to know that you're scared of heights. I think that will help a lot. A lot of people considering becoming a pilot.
But no, again, even doing the trial flight will make you realise that actually it's nothing that you thought it would be like. It's just a lot more... even though it's a smaller aircraft and it's, you feel a lot more bumps and stuff because it is a light aircraft, because you know what's going on and because whoever you're with will explain to you what's going on, it's not scary.
Yeah. And in terms of, I think you said earlier on, it takes within 8 months, 18 months, someone can be flying. Okay. Yeah. That's still really a quick, really
it
short amount of time.
Yeah. So it just shows you how intense the training is, because honestly, if you go integrated, so that's going basically to a flight school doing all the training in one go, it is very, very, very full on. Like you don't have a break. But again, if you do it modular, like the way I'm doing, the way the university goes, it's you do sections of your training at each time. So the way the university works is that if you're doing the commercial pilot training course, you do your first, so in your first year, you do your private pilot's license whilst you're doing first year university. So that's basically once a week, I think it was, or twice a week. You go to the flight school and you're doing your training for your private pilot's license. So you spend all day at the airfield, you're flying about, you're doing all that training. And then 3 days a week, you're doing your university work, your lectures, your assignments, all that boring stuff. But because it's combined, it just clicks and it just makes it so much easier for someone who takes... like for me, I need to understand stuff to really, really get it. It just helps so much. And then in your second year, you're away doing your ATPL theory exam. So that's when I went to the flight school. And that was literally 7 months, every single day, 9 to 5 in the classroom, coming home, having like a half an hour dinner, and then going straight to the books every day for 7 months. I think I went home like once. We had a 1 week break between the two blocks of teaching. That's when I went home in 7 months. So it is very intense. But again, because you're learning so much, it doesn't feel like, you know, it's going too fast. It just feels like, yeah, the more you learn, the better it is. And then when you come back for your third year in university, you just do university work. So it's just purely assignments, all your level six, coursework, your dissertation. And then once you finish your third year, then you go back to your flight school, finish that remainder, like 3-4 months of flight training you've got left. And because you combine everything all together, even though it's still intense doing the bachelor's, and although it does take slightly longer from the 2 years of doing flight training or the 3 years of doing university, the university, you get a bachelor's and a flight license, whereas if, flight training, you just get the flying license. So it really depends on what you want to get out of it. But the time-wise, it is still pretty quick. Whatever route you do, I still find it's still very quick.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think, you know, although it's intense, I think the excitement of the fact that actually you're working towards flying, and once you get that first-hand experience of flying, it must be amazing. What's the hardest part in terms of, I always think that it's the landing. And do you have to do simulation before you're allowed to land? Because so, taking off sounds it seems quite easy, right? I'm not saying you just press a button like you said earlier, but
so when you're doing a private pilot's license, you're flying a single engine aircraft, and the goal is basically to send you solo. So basically you want to be flying that aircraft. By the time you get your license, you are going to be fully qualified to fly that aircraft, land that aircraft, do whatever with that aircraft. And that usually takes, depending on the weather, it can take people a couple of months, it can take people almost a year. But the goal is you're in charge of the aircraft. So I remember when I first started flying, I was like, oh my God, what's going on? There's too many things going on. But as you learn first how to fly, which doesn't take too long. It surprisingly doesn't take you that long to learn how to fly. It's not that hard. But like you said, the landing and all the safety stuff that goes with it, those are the things that take the longest to learn. So once you learn how to fly, you're all good. You probably get that in maybe 5 hours of flying. Then the next 10, 12 hours are all about what happens if this happens, what are you going to do if this happens, all the emergencies. And then the last part is the landing. So there's this part in training called circuits. So instead of going up and flying wherever you want to, you're literally going up, flying a circuit, coming down, landing, flying up. So basically it's to practice your landings. And yeah, landings are probably going to be the hardest part of the flying, because it's just, you know, you have to get that perfect angle, the perfect pitch, the perfect speed, and it takes experience. But I feel like everyone says this, all the instructors say this as well. Once you've got it, it clicks, you've got it. Like, it's not too difficult anymore, but it's just that hard experience. And the more you do it, the more lessons you have, or the experience you get from it, it becomes easier, I would say.
Yeah. And in terms of reading the dials and the controls in an aeroplane, yeah, it's probably more modern now, and maybe some of the calculations are done for you. But yeah, in terms of mathematics required whilst flying, how much do you need that ability to?
So it depends on what type of aircraft and what type of flying you're doing. But when you're learning to do your private pilot's license, you're learning on aircraft that are like 60 years old. So they're still pretty, very basic, very like, you know, there's no automation, nothing like that. So you're learning literally from scratch. So compared to, like, if I showed you the flight deck of like a Cessna 150 or something like that, it's the most basic thing ever compared to like an Airbus 320. But again, in terms of the maths, it's not too difficult. It's for maths, learning to fly, the only maths you would need is like mental maths. So you'll need to calculate fuel in your head. You need to say, okay, I've been flying for this much. Fuel burn is 25 litres an hour. I've been flying for an hour. How much fuel do I have left? Or if you go off your track, because you're flying, when you're doing your private pilot's license, you're not flying with automation, you're actually flying with a map. Like, you've got a map in your hand and you've got a compass, and that's how you're flying. So it's very different to obviously when you're flying jets. But when you're learning how to fly, you've got a map in your hand, you've got a ruler, you've got all your instruments in front of you, and you just need to be able to work out, okay, I'm off track by this much, the calculation is this, work it out. So it's all mental maths, but it's not like you need to do physics and equations in your head. It's just the quicker you are at your mental maths, like your six times table and stuff, because it's 6 minutes for this, blah, blah, blah. It gets, again, with experience, the more you do it, the better it is. But you do not need to have like full qualifications of maths and physics to get by. Yeah.
Great. That's really helpful.
I wanted to ask you another question.
Yeah.
Just off the back of the maps and whatnot, how difficult is navigating when you're basically flying? Because there's no roads kind of thing. Like, how does it work?
So when you do your private pilot's license, it's all visual flying. So one reason why it takes people very long to fly is because you need to have good weather. You need to be able to see within a certain distance. You need to be able to see the ground. And with visual flying, you have the map, but it's different to like your Google Maps. The map we have is called a chart, and it basically highlights the towns. So you can see the shapes of the towns. You can see like the motorways or the railways. And those are visual points which you use to navigate yourself. So if you have like a massive town, like for example, Oxford, you know it's shaped like this, blah, blah, blah. And the same shape is on the chart. So you know, okay, that's there. And then you have the river that's following this way. So you have all of those things. And when you're doing navigation on the chart, it's measured and drawn specifically. So you can get your ruler and it's drawn to scale. So you measure however much the distance is on the chart, and that's how much it is in real life. So you can fly, let's say, 10 nautical miles in however many minutes. And then if you actually fly that track within 10 minutes, you know, bang on, you're going to be from here to here in 10 minutes. So yeah, it's a lot of calculations, but again, because the more you do it, the easier it gets. Like at first when I saw it, I was like, oh my God, what is this? But again, the more you do it, the more you learn about it, the easier it becomes. And then, especially if you're flying, like if it's at the same school for a long time, you kind of get to know the area. So where I was flying in Wickham, like from Wickham all the way up until like Milton Keynes, I know every single area. I know the shape of the tower, you know what river's here, what road's here, blah, blah, blah. So there's a lot of visual points up in the air that people don't realize. Or even like long towers, there's tower masts that people use. Like when you're driving past, you just think, oh, a tower mast. But actually, if you're flying, that could be a visual point for you to turn this way or turn that way.
Oh, wow.
So it's not too difficult. But again, up in the air looks very different to on the ground. Like up in the air, everything looks tiny. Like a town could be literally this big, but obviously on the ground it's massive.
Have you flied internationally yet?
So I flew, the most international I've been is actually flew to France last year or 2 years ago.
Wow.
So I flew from Wickham to Latuke. It was only about an hour's flight, but because we were crossing international waters and actually going into France, it was such a big experience. Like you have to do all the immigration, you have to file a flight plan, and you're in another country. So you also have to think about the time difference and all of that. So yeah, once you've got your private license, you can pretty much go anywhere within the range of your aircraft.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that amazing.
Yeah, it's a massive experience.
So, thanks. I think this we're getting close to the end. It's been really helpful to get this insight, and you've articulated it amazingly well. So, to wrap up, we've got kind of three sentences that we ask all our guests to complete or finish off. So I'll go through them now. So first one is, success to me means, and that can be, oh, go on. So you look like you're ready to go. So I won't explain you. I think you get the gist of it. So I'll let you jump straight in. So success to me means.
Success to me means achieving the goals that I've set out for myself. So I know success can be very different for everyone, but for me, the way I get organized and the way I feel like I progress is by setting goals, whether they're small or big. Success is achieving those goals. Where, like for me last year, it was graduating with a first and getting this and this on my assignments. That was, for me, I felt very successful because I had achieved what I set out to achieve for myself. So success to me is completing my personal goals and achieving them to the best of me.
That's great. Yeah, I think the power of goal setting is I think people don't appreciate it enough. I think it's really important for people who haven't started already to set yourself some goals. It's a bit like if you were flying a plane and you don't know where you're heading, then you're pretty much just going to be flying around going nowhere. So, you know, same way when you're flying, you have to know where your destination
is.
It's a bit like with your life and careers, you need to know your final destination. And it might be that, you know, when you're en route to that destination, you decide, actually, I'm going to go somewhere else. I'm going to land somewhere else. So you can always change your goals, but, you know, it's important to have those.
You want to have that end thing,
Yeah.
That's right.
Next one is, I wish I had known.
I wish I had known that it was okay to be more confident and to not let what other people, what I think other people are thinking of me, to get in the way. Because I remember when I started university, or when I started this whole experience, I was very, very shy and I was literally the least talkative person there. And I wish I had known that, just to step out of my comfort zone, because although it didn't feel nice stepping out of your comfort zone, because everyone likes to be comfortable, and you know, I wish I had known just to take that leap, even if it was small steps. I wish I had known just to carry on taking those steps and getting out of my comfort zone, because in the long run it will help so much in terms of building yourself and developing your confidence, and just everything falls into place if you have that confidence.
Yeah, great. And then the last one is, the best advice I could give.
The best advice I could give sort of relates to what I've just said, but it is to not let your fears get in the way of what you want to do, whether that's a small goal, a long-term goal, or just anything you've always wanted to do. Don't let something small stop you, because there will be, whatever you do, there will be some barriers you face in your life. And the breaking point is whether you choose to let them affect you or let them define you. So again, like especially with like being a girl in aviation or in any STEM subject, a lot of girls I'm sure are very scared about how it's going to be for them. But if they do not break that barrier and actually see what's out there, then they're going to stop themselves from reaching their goals or finding out these opportunities that they probably would never experience if they didn't do it.
Great answer. Great advice. Very inspiring to other females that are considering pursuing a career in,
even with boys. I know some boys might be find it very difficult, or their family might not approve, or you know, there might be some barriers that they might be facing, maybe discouragement for someone. But again, if they let those barriers stop them, then that's it. They're going to stay behind those barriers. They're not going to be able to see what's out there for themselves. So I would really encourage just anyone to carry on going for what you really, really want to go for, whether it is finding an alternative route or finding some sort of way. But don't let them stop you from just getting that goal, if that makes sense.
Definitely makes sense. Excellent. Thank you so much. So right. I think we're going to wrap up. I just want to give you a chance to kind of let people know where they can find you on socials. I know you've recently launched an online business. I think it would be great for you to share, because I think the products that you're creating are fantastic and relevant for our audience. So would you like to let people know kind of where they can find you, and also if you like your online business?
If anyone wants to find me on LinkedIn, my name is Fariha Ahmed. You can search for me. I'm sure it'll come up somewhere if you type in Fariha Ahmed Bucks. If you actually go on the Bucks website, there is a function where you can chat to our current students, and I'm on there. So if you want to chat to me about the course, or if you want to find out more about both the bachelor's or the master's at Bucks, because I've been through them both, you're more than welcome to chat to me there. In terms of my small business, actually during like the third lockdown, I got a bit bored at home. And I thought I'll expand my henna business. So I've been making like these personal notebooks and been selling them on Etsy. So again, you can find me at Fariha Henna on Etsy. And yeah, so that's basically me.
Beautiful.
Great. And I think that's a great example of, you know, making the most of the lockdown.
Yeah.
You know, it's very easy for us to get distracted, you know, sit and watch Netflix, or, you know, some people might be into gaming or whatever. Yeah. But actually, you've really made the most of the opportunity.
And again, it's always thinking about long term. What can you be doing now to help you long term in the future? Whether it's something small, like literally these notebooks, they don't take me very long. Like, I just paint them and then print out the name, stick the name on. But
what's the inside? Can we see the inside as well?
Of course, they're just lined notebooks. So they're basically, I don't know if you see them. Yeah, they're just
lined notebooks. Perfect. Okay, great.
But yeah, they were just something, because I do henna as a part-time thing, especially before COVID. I used to do it on like brides and stuff. Yeah. And because obviously none of that's happening right now, I thought, what else could I be doing with it? And it's always thinking about, what can you be doing next? I think that's the best. Another big advice I can give is, what can always be thinking about what you can be doing next, because it's so easy to think of. It's so easy to stick where you are right now and just be comfortable and be like, yeah, this is going on, this is going on, I'm all good. But the best thing to do is continue your professional development, your personal development, and just keep going for your goals.
Great. Thank you. I think that's a good place to end it then. So thank you so much again for coming on.
You're welcome.
Really, and I think keep us updated with your progress, and hopefully get you back on again when you land a job as a commercial pilot or another area in aviation, which I'm sure you will.
That'd be really great. Yeah, I'd love to.